Hey, Peoples, this is the Conspiracy Oz podcast. I'm your host, Nick Raven. It is Wednesday, the 17th of January, 2024. This is a review covering alternative news and events. You can call +61 02 8006 1918 anytime. Drop me an email at conspiracyoz@protonmail.com. Go to the website conspiracyoz.com. Download the podcast from iTunes, Spotify, or podomatic.com. Get with the D program. Now, I will do three COVID rats today. I only did one last week, so I've got to get through this list so I can get the group school photo up of the COVID rats of 2019, which there are many, a lot more than I thought there would be. I thought it was just the heads of each state and territory and plus the heads of the medical boards. I thought that would be enough, as well as the federal ones. But no, the minions are thick and thin. There are minions of the minions, which I've already mentioned last week. So all shall be named. We'll get as many names. If I'm missing anyone at the end of it, please send me an email to conspiracyoz@protonmail.com and let me know. None shall pass. Famous words. But today I also thought just to do the three, I'm also just going to go through the latest news too, because a lot of the times I don't do that. I focus on subjects, which is what I want to do. But sometimes it's good to just browse through. And it's usually the ABC. It's the mouthpiece for the government. And I go through the stories there and just let you know what they want you to know. And then try and read between the lies or the lines, either or. So I'm just scrolling through the headlines. This one's from the 10th of January, 2024. So last week. But important, because you're going to see a lot more of these things flying around on the streets, people, as I've been mentioning for months and months. You will have noticed now that there are e-bikes, e-scooters, and even little e-hover, skateboards, flying around as well, because everything's powered by Chinese lithium batteries. So this one's from the abc.net.au, and it says, Sydney's first metropolitan e-scooter trial commences in Cogra's town centre. So it's got, this is coming. We're not going to be able to get around this. It's part of the agenda is to get rid of internal combustions off the road. So they're not going to fine these people as much as they are going to try and pull over all the drivers in petrol cars to try and get them off the road. It's going to be an exercise that you're going to notice, and you're going to be scratching your head going, this is insane. Because it is. It says the first trial of shared e-scooters in Sydney's metropolitan area began in Cogra today. So that was last week. 60 scooters have been placed around Cogra's town centre and may be ridden in an area between St George's Hospital, Jubilee Oval and Allawah Carlton and Cogra train stations. Now, remember, this is all to do with the 20-minute city, people. They want you to go short distances. That's the whole point. So it says, for the next 12 months, riders can take an e-scooter to go 20 kilometres an hour on roads with 50 kilometre speed limits and won't be able to mount footpaths. Now, you and I know they are mounting footpaths all the time, constantly, especially e-bikes that almost run you over all the time. It's happened to me a few times now. So this is it. Because they're kids, they don't want to be on the road. Well, the cars are. They want to take their 100-kilogram death machines onto the footpaths. And it's only a matter of time before someone's killed. It's just a matter of time. But we'll have to wait for that. It's coming. So it says, George's River Mayor Sam Elmer says the council is pleased to be the first in Sydney's metro area to roll out the devices. It's really a great way to showcase progress within our area and provide our residents with a different form of transport. You get it, people? To scoot around, Mr. Elmer told ABC Sydney. So you can see the mayor's on one of these scooters. Yeah, right. You'll get electric cars soon and we'll have to pay for it. But so it says people are sick and tired of having to get in their vehicle and go down to the shops to get a bottle of milk. So this guy thinks that he can get on a scooter, carry, bottle of milk, burgers and lunch on an e-scooter. Not a bike, scooter. So this is where the unreality part comes in. They want you out of your car, people. They don't want you to own one anymore. So it's got trial of the scooters was held in 2022 in Parklands in Western Sydney, but were not run on any council roads. See, so this is where they're letting it out now. The trial is one of six being held in New South Wales, with the others being held in regional areas, including Wollongong, Armidale, Foster, Albury and Lake Macquarie. So you can see they're doing it out of the public view, and then they'll bring it in. Because I'll just say it was successful. Only shared scooters from provider Beam are part of the trial. So let's have a look up. Let's look up Beam people and see why they got the leg up. Because I wonder if it's connected to any globalist arm. I have no idea, but I'm going to actually go and do a bit of a rabbit hole. One sec. Well, so far it looks like a Singaporean company. Of course, not an Australian one. That would just be unheard of, wouldn't it? An Australian company's in Australia. Be not going to happen. So this is, again, an outside company coming in to capitalise on the Australian public. And it's got here, actually, it says the company, which is the Asia-Pacific region's largest micro-mobility business, counts local venture capital firm Right Click Capital as an investor. So let me look that one up. Now, Right Click itself is an Australian startup, but it has a very big investor to help them along the way, a guy called Tim Draper. This is a person that I'll just read his little Wikipedia and you'll go, what? In other words, there's an American arm pushing the e-scooters into Kogra and the rest of Sydney. It says Tim Draper is an American venture capital investor and founder of Draper, Fisher, Jerviston and Draper University, Draper Venture Network. That's the one that invests in Right Click Capital in Australia. And it says his most prominent investments include Baidu, Hotmail, Skype, Tesla, SpaceX. Should I read on, people? The list is ridiculous. It's Twitch, Ancestry.com. It's a really, really big list. He also, I think, he bought out Bitcoin at one stage. So you can see that it's another influence outside of the one we think we have. Of course, on the Right Click Capital, there was just three partners that are in Australia. But these are the guys that gave them the push, which is Tim Draper from what his arm was called, the Draper Venture Network. Now, it's very hard to find this stuff online. It's almost like these guys are so powerful, there's not much they can get in. Like, you can't get LinkedIn, you've got to sign up, and Wikipedia, very minimal. But these are big guns. So I'm thinking, well, really that's just an arm of an American company, and that's the way we're going to go. So whatever they say, Right Click Capital will push the e-scooters, and then there'll be other companies pushing other agendas. This is to get rid of the cars, to turn it into 20-minute cities so that they have more control because the population is on foot or on the electric buses, or, as I just stated, you know, you get like the mayor of Cogni, you just get on your e-scooter and go and do your shopping. And so that's just the mind boggles. But anyway, that's what they look, it's not too far off what I said years ago, where I said people should be in their, will eventually get into their rickshaws, their straw hats and sandals. We're not that far off, people. If a lot of people can't afford electric cars, what are they going to buy? They're going to have to buy an electric bike, or they're going to have to buy an electric scooter. Now, these things aren't allowed on the road. Well, not, they're allowed on the road, but they're not allowed to go where they're, where there's no jurisdiction. So in other words, let me put that another way. The e-scooters have to go in designated areas. Now, they've got like a what they call a GPS built in them. If they go off the beaten path, they stop working. They simply don't work. Now, I'm waiting to see what happens, how they get vandalised, because they did this with hire bikes in Sydney and all around Australia, and all these hire bikes ended up in the, you know, in trees, in lakes, they just ended up everywhere but what they were used for. This is going to go the same way. It's a sort of a fight back thing where people realise that this is what they're being offered. At the moment, it's just going to be the young people grabbing them and flying all around the cities, and that's fine. But for the rest of us, no, that's not what was meant to happen. But this is what they want to do. They want to push this green idea, because they've hijacked it, and turn it into their control mechanism, which is to strip people of their private ownership of cars, houses, anything, and turn them into vessels for this new world order, which is just a bunch of venture capitalists, very rich billionaires, the usual suspects, people. It isn't really hard to see past it all, because that's the ultimate control, which is control, and that's what they want. So unless we put our foot down, people, literally, they will get their way. They will power through, and we will be hooked on lithium batteries for everything we do. And remember, these lithium batteries are worse for the carbon footprint than actual coal. So in the long run, people will end up scratching their heads again, just like the pandemic when it ended, apparently, and said, but hang on, why do we have to do all that you know, bossing around and QR coding and quarantining and lockdowns. Why do we have to do that when it didn't even work? Well, this is the same thing. This isn't going to work either, but they're going to make you try and do it. They're going to use an excuse to push the real agenda through, which is control. So I'm waiting to see what happens. I mean, there are people here that I'm waiting to see if the councils locally get told that along comes Beam, that have been pushed by Right Click Capital, which is then pushed by a billionaire in the US. So again, it's, to me, it's no surprises at all that these agendas get pushed from a higher source. That's how it works. You get a company, you try and find something on them. You can't. It was really hard to find the venture capitalist for that one, people. Seriously, you had to really dig to find it. And it did I thought I'd find it in 5-10 minutes. No, it took about half an hour to do that. And I was so surprised because the links, you've got to remember Google and Wikipedia work against people that are trying to find the rabbit holes, okay? This is the problem. So a VPN with something like startpage.com, even the Tor browser, is another way of trying to figure out what could be the truth. This is how desperate we've got just for news, because the press tube media is completely and utterly bought and sold. That's how it is. Now, reading on that story to finish up, and I've got another e-bike one after this. It says, forced slowdowns to address safety. It says, scooters will only be able to be used on roads with 50-kilometre speed limits and may not be used on footpaths. It says, geofencing technology. This is where the bike won't work outside of a certain mapped area. This is how you know how powerful something like Google Street View is getting, when they can map out in real time an actual real area and then control it electronically. That's pretty out there, people. Now, they're not doing it from the street, they're doing it from the object, but it reacts to the GPS that's in it, which is obviously this geofencing technology. And it says it's in scooters and it can detect when they're near a footpath, Mr. Helmier said. It says when they do get close to the footpath, they will slow down to 10 kilometres walking speed limit. So in other words, they're not stopping. They still work, but there are some that actually are cut out and don't work anymore. So it says some people have some safety concerns, but those safety concerns are being alleviated. Really? You want to see that video of the e-scooter guy that whacks into that woman and takes out a shoulder, and I think it cost nearly $30,000 to fix it up. And I don't even know if she's still fighting in court, but this is in Australia. It says, restrictions reinforce New South Wales' laggard status. It says, a relatively small area and number of scooters has an active transport expert worried the trial is too restrictive and will produce negative results. They need to tell me who that is too, the expert. It says, you're already reducing the number of prospective users that would be able to benefit. Griffith University research, Madison Bland said. What a name, Mr. Bland. It said, they will also skew the final numbers. Mr. Bland said, New South Wales is a laggard when it comes to e-scooter adoption and should look to already completed trials in Brisbane. In Brisbane, we have an effective system with a dual operator model that has a tried and trusted approach, Mr. Bland said. I think Transport for New South Wales could go ahead and just roll this out rather than going ahead with another trial. I will look this guy up now because he's really, really stepping over the mark there, people, and he's really pushing to get these things on the road. So there must be some sort of ulterior motive. So let's have a look at this guy. You can see that this is all going to go back to a controller every time. Straight away, I've gone to his LinkedIn. It's a long-haired, red-headed fellow. He looks about probably 30, from Gold Coast, Queensland, and he's got a thesis or something saying, on the cusp of finalising my thesis titled Planning for a Large-Scale Active Transport. So you can see he's after mountains of e-scooter riders to be flying all around the place. That seems to be his push. Of course, LinkedIn now covers up the paper trail of where they've worked and what credentials they've got. So again, nothing there, so I can't see anything. It's they've blocked it all up. Oh, hang on, there's something here. It's got his volunteer experience, and it just says a plasma partner for blood services, a door knock appeal volunteer for leukemia, and a junior development coach for the district cricket club. There you go, people. This is a guy that wants to push e-scooters all around Australia, and he's saying, forget the trials, let's just do it. Get on with it. So there you go. I mean, basically, this is where all the minions are the minions, where they just push, push, push. They've been told that this is the thing to do, and if you do it, a bag of gold will come, or you get a gold star on your forehead, either or. So I'm just thinking, Mr. Mad Bland, let it go, brother. It's not going to be worth it. The WEF wants everyone out of their cars forever, and they don't want anyone driving around anymore unless you're a very wealthy person connected and you can have your electric car. And that's it. So I'm saying that this is a global push to get this sort of green technology and green digital prison system in place. Once they do it, you can't reverse it, people. Once they get this going, you can't get out of the matrix. That's the problem here. And, you know, it looks all simple and nice, and why don't we just get a scooter and drive into the sunset? But they don't understand that the ulterior motive is to get people out of their cars because they're terrible polluters. Yet, to make a lithium battery is actually worse for the environment than pulling coal out of the ground. This is the thing. So you must think to yourself, why are they doing this then? Then you understand what the agenda is really all about, and it's got nothing to do with saving the planet, people. And actually, it looks like the ABC interviewed him once on The Conversation, conversation.com, and it's got the same picture. And it says, Madison Bland is a PhD graduate at Griffith University Cities Research Institute. His research work focuses on planning for active transport with specific focus on walking and cycling infrastructure and service provision. So, yeah, out of your car and just use the two feet, one foot in front of the other one. It just doesn't surprise me at all, people. Actually, I found another guy that's connected to this Madison Bland, just because I was going to actually let it go. But then I thought, oh, no, I just want to see what they're doing, because this is going to hit the councils everywhere, the e-scooters. And I thought, this guy's pushing something else. So I thought, I'm going to see what it is. And it is something else. It's called a green bridge. And you're going, oh, is that a bridge painted green? Not quite. It's actually a fictitious bridge. But what they want to do is create places where people cycle and walk. In other words, no more cars. And it's very interesting to see that they did this on the Gold Coast in Australia. So this is in Queensland. There's a lot of affluent people that live in the Gold Coast. So it's going to be interesting to see how they would get their bicycles past people that are what they call, I'll give you the names of these. They're called the NIMBYs and the YIMBYs. Now, a NIMBY is not in my backyard. And a YIMBY is, yes, in my backyard. Now, this is the interesting thing. They said all the people aged 70 and over were opposed to the green bridges. Now, you understand what this is, people. Those people need their cars. They need mobility. What these people want to do is get them out of their cars, force them onto e-scooters or e-bikes, things they can't actually drive. That's why they're opposed. And also the fact is, and this is a very important fact, the people that agreed, I'll go to the actual graph after they did their, this is like a study. So I've got a PDF study on what these people did at Griffith University to get the result they got. So you go down the entire study. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. They interviewed about 400 people all up, and they got a little graph out of it. And then they got their results. And this was the result. See if I can find it. I actually laughed because I thought, you know, it's obvious that they're going to try and push the homeowners off the land. So the unhomeowners, get it right, actually win. So it's got here, and it's funny how they've coloured the graphs. Like one side is like a red or like a dull red, and the other side is green, which obviously means the green bridges. So it's got less supportive, the NIMBYs. 70 years old and over, sorry. It says reside in separate detached and semi-detached housing, owners. And it says located at the Isle of Capri, lived in the area for more than 10 years. Now, the one that support it, wait till you hear this, people. This is between the ages of 18 and 29, resides in flats and apartments, rent their dwellings, located in Service Paradise or outside the study area. It doesn't say how long they've lived there. They may have just got here from Argentina or wherever. So you can see straight away what's going on here, people. They want to rob the private landowners of their land by using these green bridges and cut off where cars can access. This is what it's all about. The same thing happened in Oxford in the UK when they set up a 20-minute city. They said, right, what will happen now is cars can't go down there anymore. And people went, what? I can't take my child to school just down there. No, you're going to have to drive through three other zones and a big giant horseshoe to get to something that was virtually across the road. That's what's happening. It's unbelievable, the overreach. So people didn't, they're not obeying people. They're driving over the bollards. They're not paying the fines. That's what can happen if you don't stop this in its tracks. Okay, so the Green Bridge is a fictitious area where they let bike people on electric bikes, e-scoot, whatever they want, but not internal combustion cars. Okay, so you can see it's just another way to squeeze the car out of the metropolitan areas, not just the cities. That's where they wanted to start them first. Now they want to squeeze them everywhere. So this is why they're pushing the e-scooter and the e-bike, and they're not finding them as much as they should. I see e-bike riders all over the place, all over the road, no helmets. Sometimes two and three I saw the other day on an e-bike. And you just think it's only a matter of time, okay, until something really serious happens. The way they're looking at it, but if a car hits one of them, it's the car's fault because it's big, it's dirty, and it's bad for the environment. That's what's going to happen. It's called perception, people. Perception. So that PDF was from a study called the Australasian Transport Research Forum Incorporated. So there you go. It's probably a government-funded entity that's going to push to get rid of what they call, this is, and remember this term, because I'm going to remember, it's called active travel. This is when you get out of your car, because you're not allowed back in it, and you have to start walking. If you've got a medical condition, too bad. That's the way, well, you're going to have to get yourself a mobility scooter, aren't you? More costs and less protection. And this is what's going to happen, people. This is what they're trying to do really hard, and they're not going to stop, because this is part of the world agenda to get you out of your car. It's definitely part of the agenda. And then they'll get you out of your house eventually, and you will own nothing, as Klaus Schwab has said many times, and you'll be very happy, apparently. And of course, nobody's looking at the actual consequences. Remember, if you put a 70-year-old on an e-scooter, what do you think is going to happen eventually? Anyway, there's a headline that came out, abc.net.au. Melbourne doctors call for greater regulation of e-scooters as injuries rise, clogging up hospitals. Wednesday, 20th of December 2023, it says Surgeon Anand, oh, this is going to be a hard name to do, Ramakrishnan, remembers when the Victorian government began a trial of e-scooters in early 2022. He said the number of people presenting at the Royal Melbourne Hospital where he works increased significantly. Prior to that, we've seen some injuries with private e-scooters, but there was a real marked increase in the number of emergency presentations, and in particular presentations to the plastic surgery unit, he said. Accidents involving e-scooters can be deadly. Late last year, a 28-year-old Melbourne man died after crashing his e-scooter. He was not wearing a helmet. A study by the Royal Melbourne Hospital found 256 patients were admitted to the Royal Melbourne Hospital with e-scooter injuries in the 12 months up to January 2023. It says the total number of patients across the state injured by e-scooters is likely to be much, much higher, doctors believe. Facial fractures, upper limb injuries and brain injuries were among the most common presentations, as up to a third of riders didn't wear a helmet. And it says men make up 69% of those injured by an e-scooter, and an average age of those were injured was 29. So these are the very ones that want the Green Bridge, people. They want head injuries badly, apparently. It says it found alcohol was involved in more than a third of the presentations. It says we found that there was a spike in the number of presentations to our emergency department near the end of the week, so Friday, Saturday and Sunday, Dr. Ramakrishnan said. We presume it's because they're the times in which there is increased use of these modes of transport. Yeah, they're riding them drunk, people, because no, well, you don't need to get in a car now. You don't need a plan B because you've got a plan E. So it says Dr. Ramakrishnan said presentations of e-scooter injuries are adding pressure on hospitals already struggling to cope. The more of this sort of trauma that comes in, the less time there is for elective work, put bluntly, he said. He said treating injured riders and pedestrians is putting a strain on elective surgery, wait times at the Royal Melbourne Hospital, which has a limited number of operating theatres and a limited number of staff and resources. And you think, okay, Mr. Bland wants the 70-year-olds to give it up, and they're the very ones that need the elective surgery, and here he is promoting the 18 to 29-year-olds who are getting injured and then robbing those people of the rest of their lives. It's a bit of a circular sort of economy in that sense too, isn't it, people? Where, you know, you can reuse the 18 to 29-year-olds to keep getting injured, and you can see that the hospitals themselves, even with COVID at the time, they can't cope. People have left that industry because of what happened in COVID. So they're already understaffed as it is. And so this is, to me, going to add to the problem by bringing in all this extra, what they call green technology, to fight against this system that's been around for like more than 100 years. Yeah, people used to have a horse and cart. They don't go that fast, people. Not like an e-scooter or a car where you can actually do damage. You can get hurt on a horse, but the fact is that was a mode of transport back in the day that was slower, more reliable, and you actually cared about your transport. Whereas these days, people just, well, there you go, shared economy. They just throw the scooter away when they're finished with it, and that's the sort of attachment you get. So I'm saying, people, this is a massive throwaway society they've created, and they can't really uncreate it by calling it a green economy. It's not going to work. It's a con. That's what it is. It's a con, and they know it, and they just want you to not know it. Anyway, so just to finish off the article, it says, the study found that e-scooter injuries are costing taxpayers about $2 million in hospital costs alone. And he says, the doctor, this is not taking into account any time off work, any cost of ongoing health issues, and it certainly doesn't cover any outpatient care, he said. He says, so I suspect we're grossly underrepresenting the cost to the taxpayer. He is calling for better regulation of e-scooters, but said, with the right system in place, the scooters can be a useful form of transport. Uh-oh. Cars are better regulated than e-scooters, and individuals tend to decide to ride them on the spur of the moment. Dr. Ramakrishnan said, I think cars are more regulated. I think you stand a good chance of being pulled over in a car for a routine breath test, but I don't think that's the case with these scooters. And he's actually right. And the next story, because I'm not going to read that full story, it's actually quite a long story. But the next story I saw was absolutely right up the breathalyzer alley, you could say. So I'm just going to grab that story one sec. There it is there. Okay. I'll just see what the date is on this, because this could be dated back. Oh, no, it's only 20th of December, 2023, abc.net.au. Queensland government considers random breath testing for electric scooter riders and cyclists. So it says Queensland's random breath testing regime could be expanded to include cyclists and scooter users. Unlike with motorists, police in Queensland do not have the legal authority to conduct RBTs on bicycle and scooter riders. So of course they're going to abuse it, people. But the state government has signalled this could change. The Department of Transport and Main Roads has confirmed it is investigating ways to further address drink riding in the Sunshine State. Can you imagine a police car? Just to sort of get this around your head. There's an e-scooter guy. He's drunk. He's all over the road. Cars are swerving to get out of the way. The police give chase in a car. What do you think is going to happen to the e-scooter rider? He's going to go off the rails, literally, and he's going to end up with a head injury. He's not going to outrun the police car, or maybe some of them can. But the bottom line is he's going to lose control of the scooter and he's going to end up either dead or gravely injured. That's what's going to happen. So, the same thing can happen with a car chase. Absolutely. But a scooter is very vulnerable. You've got virtually no protection. Okay. So, yeah, they should do RBTs on them. I mean, this is just, we all cop them. We pay registration. We cop them. Why should they allow to have a mode of transport just because they say it's green and not have to obey the law? Seems a bit reasonable to me to pull them over for a random breath test. And it says, this could include law changes to enable RBTs for riders, setting appropriate blood alcohol concentration limits and bringing in penalties for those offences. It says, before progressing any changes, consultation will be undertaken with key stakeholders and the community, including vulnerable road user groups. A spokesman said, this work forms part of the Personal Mobility Safety Action Plan, which was released in mid-2022. So they knew they were going to have to do something because this was going to be a can of worms that was going to open up big. And it says, although police do not have the power to conduct RBTs on scooter users and cyclists, they can arrest riders and test their alcohol levels if they believe they are under the influence of liquor. So they can't do a random breath test and just pull them over. They've got to have reasonable suspicion that they're drunk, okay? So I'm not going to read any more, but you can see that this needs to happen. and it needs to happen pretty soon, because at the moment, most of the scooter riders I see and e-bikes are actually underage. They're actually just kids. And you think, wow, what a loophole. Anyway. Okay, someone handed me a local story on the Northern Beaches in Sydney about e-bikes, and it was from a local magazine, one called Peninsula Living, which is actually a local magazine on the Northern Beaches. But it's also, I think it might be online, but at the moment I've just got a hard copy that was handed to me. And it just says, and I'm just seeing if I can get the date, because I don't think there's a date on this. It's just a page from the hard copy. It's not the actual booklet that it comes with. But it just says, Know Your E-Bike Rules. And I thought, oh, this could be interesting. And it's got, earlier this year, Council and the Northern Beaches Police Area Command audited use of e-bikes and scooters on footpaths. The audit found several safety issues, including speed, lack of helmets, and limited knowledge of the New South Wales road rules among young riders. It says, with e-bike, e-scooter and hoverboard, there it is, use on the rise around the beaches this summer, Council has prepared a guide for users to safely navigate locally shared roads and paths. The handy tips include, wear a helmet. It's a legal requirement for all bicycle riders, including those on e-bikes. It says, in New South Wales, all e-mobility devices except e-bikes are restricted to private property only. Isn't that interesting? In New South Wales, all e-mobility devices except e-bikes are restricted to private property only. It is illegal to ride e-scooters or hoverboards on the road or footpath, resulting in a $723 fine. And you're thinking, but I saw an e-scooter go past me the other day. In fact, people, when we get our takeout, which is like Thai, because we get Thai or Indian, we love that sort of food. We've had it for decades. The other day, one of them turned up from the Thai place on the e-scooter with the food. And I knew it because I saw the headlight and he was going up the wrong way of the one-way street that was in our area. And I just thought to myself, what? He turns up with the food on an e-bike, and I went, nice bike. And then off he went into the dark. And I just thought to myself, that's illegal. But there you go. If they can get away with it, they will, because you can't hear them. They whiz up the street. They're completely invisible. And because if you don't have a light on them, and they're noiseless, so you can't even hear them coming. This is a dangerous thing that's happening. But anyway, it says, and I like this part, teach your child about the road and shared paths. It says rules can be found at the Transport for New South Wales website under Road Rules for Bicycle Riders. I mean, this is it. They think that all the people riding them are kids, but they're actually not. A lot of the people that are riding these things are actually adults flying up the roads. And just to finish up in the article, it says, know your e-bike speed limits. It says exceeding the 25 kilometres an hour speed limit without pedalling. I always wondered what the pedals were for, people, makes them illegal. If you do, fines and additional infringements might be charged. So when you see these things fly past and you see pedals on them and you think, what's the point of the pedal? But that's what it is. It says here, exceeding the 25 kilometre speed limit without pedalling makes them illegal. So this is utterly ridiculous when you think about it, people. It says all bicycles need a bell to prevent collisions. I have not heard one bell on any of these e-bikes, because they're travelling so fast, you don't even hear them coming, people. They just, actually, they nearly knock people over. I've nearly been bowled over, and so has the missus. It's actually, it actually looks like they're trying to hit you. It's and they're on the footpath. So it says, pedestrians first, slow down, ring the bell when needed, and give way courteously. I mean, we're talking about drunk kids, a third of them getting injured. It's just a drunk. It's crazy. That's what the last article said, where they were just busting them. That was e-scooters. They're not even talking about the bikes. So it says, ride at safe speeds in public spaces. I mean, these are no-brainers, common sense. The next one, liability and insurance. Prepare for the unexpected and remember that in the event of an accident, parents may be held responsible for their child's behaviour on an e-bike or other device. Now, it's not always kids on these things. This is what I keep saying. It says, teach your child about the road and shared paths. And this is it. So, I mean, this is a dangerous thing. We are moving into this whole green thing blindly. And they're doing it because they're saving the environment. But they don't really care, people, about what happens to you or the environment. These people that are controlling this are doing just that. They're controlling this from the ground up. As soon as cash goes, people, we're going to be stuck in limbo, because that's when you are completely and utterly in their power, because it's all done through electronics and AI, and that's what the accountants will be eventually. And the software companies that control that, well, you just look at Facebook and Microsoft and all the behemoths that are just rolling in cash. Every year they make double their fortune. It's because everything is being acquired and moving online, where they have total control, because it all gets funneled to a central database system that they all have invested in. That's the problem. You lose all control and privacy. That's it. And then we're under their thumb from that point. And then they can start extracting the people that they don't want and getting rid of them. The great cull, I've been talking about it for years. It will come if we let it come. Now, this is a completely different subject again, but this is something to do with globalists. And you need to know about this because it's a very serious thing. The subject. This is about the Jeffrey Epstein thing. Now, what's happened on Netflix, they've got Jeffrey Epstein, Filthy Rich. It's actually worth watching the four episodes. Now, of course, you'll be screaming at the victims that say, oh, I was abused and all that. And you'll think, well, you knew what you were getting into, but oh, hang on, but I was underage. And then you realize there's literally hundreds of them and they're all on the take. And you think, wow, how did this get away with for so long where they never got busted? And you understand that there is a blackmail thing happening and there is fear. And the only reason the whole thing got exposed, you want to know what actually happened, people? One of the young girls' stepmother realized something was up and reported it. And it started from there. But it's been going on probably for decades. And it's just been uncovered now. So all the girls that were abused at the time because they're underage or that age are now wanting compensation. So you can see how this works. And you can see that, okay, they're victims, but some of these girls have been working there for years and then suddenly they were of age. And you think to yourself, how did this happen? Apparently they were getting $200 every time they went to Epstein's mansion or anywhere in the world. So they flew all over the world where they would participate in these orgies with very famous people, like Prince Andrew, people like that. And now the list is starting to come out. They've got I'll just read the article, but there's literally tons of evidence coming out. But I know and you know that the big wigs, the globalists in control, are going to try very hard to keep off that list. Hence the reason Jeffrey Epstein suddenly hung himself from a bedpost. Because, of course, he would have known who they were, because apparently he filmed a lot of these people and then blackmailed them. But we don't know if that's true. To me, it sounds like a cabal of pedophiles that actually kept it hidden because they're in control of society. So they can't get busted and they're all protecting each other's backs. Makes us think that society is not a very nice place, is it, people? Anyway, the article is called Bill Clinton. Well, of course, you know about that one. Stephen Hawking. And you go, what? Is he even capable? At an orgy and Michael Jackson. And you say, well, we sort of aren't get that bit. And who's in the unsealed Epstein documents so far? This came out from ZeroHedge.com, January the 5th, 2024. It says, here's the list of names mentioned so far in the unsealed Epstein documents, of which there are many more to come. Their inclusion does not necessarily equal wrongdoing. See, so just because your name's on the list doesn't mean you're involved in any pedophilia. It's just probably guilt by association at this stage. But he's dead now, so we can't get the truth. But Ghislaine Maxwell is still alive. And they actually got another one on Netflix where I haven't watched yet, called Ghislaine Maxwell, Filthy Rich. And she's still alive. For how long? We don't know. But she would know exactly who those people are, as well as the victims. The so-called underage girls, they know exactly who they all are now too, because it's all out in the open. So it's only a matter of time before the mud starts to stick. So it says here, Bill Clinton. Actually, it said, yeah, Bill Clinton. He once, at one time, that Clinton likes them young, referring to girls. There's a picture of him with his thumb up, people, next to Epstein. Not a good look, Bill. And then it's got Michael Jackson. One accuser was asked, did you ever meet anybody famous when you were here with Jeffrey? To which she replies, I met Michael Jackson at Jeffrey's house in Palm Beach. The accuser said she was not forced to perform massage on the pop star, It says, and they put in brackets here, and this is a bit silly, people. Perhaps because she wasn't a 12-year-old boy. But this is obviously this article is poking the fun at the pedophiles, or even the presumed ones. It says, Prince Andrew, according to accuser Joanna, looks like a Joburg, Prince Andrew touched her breast while posing for a picture with a puppet of himself. So this is where it gets tit for tat. Oh, that was a pretty bad thing to say, but you understand that on that level, it's not as serious as what's coming when we're talking at the mass audience of underage girls. That's what's very dangerous. This sort of pictures and that, that's, you know, it's not politically correct, but at the same time, we're more interested to see who's on the list, eh, people? And it says, Andy Dersowich. Now, this is extremely interesting. You're going, who's, Alan Dersowich. I couldn't read that probably, but Alan Dersowich, it says, who is vehemently denied all accusations, but allegedly came pretty often to Epstein's Florida mansion and got massages while he was there, according to accuser Virginia Guffrey. Now, he's the guy that's in the Netflix Epstein thing, and he's not, he's apparently one of the good guys, saying, yes, I knew Epstein and he got up to bad things. Now he's been accused. And he hadn't been accused yet. That's only just come out. But when the doco was made for Netflix, he was pointing the finger. This is what happens, people. You start to realise they're all tarred with the same brush. Anyway, Stephen Hawking. In addition to Joburg's defence, there is a email from Epstein to Maxwell, that's Ghislaine Maxwell, in which he says she should issue a reward to any of Guffrey's associates who can disprove her allegations. This is to do with Stephen Hawking's. It says, he says, you can issue a reward to any of Virginia's friends, acquaintance, family that come forward and help prove her allegations are false, writes Epstein. The strongest is the Clinton dinner and the new version in the Virgin Islands that Stephen Hawking's participated in an underage orgy. Hawking's was photographed on Epstein's Pedo Island in March 2006. As part of a trip to a nearby science conference. So there you go. Decades ago, people. Literally decades ago when this stuff was happening. Al Gore, of course. Guffrey, she's the one that stood up too. I know she's living in Australia now. She used to have another name, but I think it was Roberts, Virginia Roberts, back in the day. Now it's changed. So it's got Guffrey previously claimed that the former VP travelled on Epstein's carbon-spewing private plane. This is Al Gore. He has not been accused of any wrongdoing. He was on the plane. It says Bill Richardson, the former and now deceased New Mexico governor, who Guffrey says was among those who Maxwell directed her to have sex with. So this is when she was underage. George Lucas, you're going, no, not Mr. Star Wars. Joburg was asked in May of 2016 if she had ever met or given massages to several other high-profile celebrities, including George Lucas, which she denied. So he shouldn't even be mentioned there, people. But you can see the press tube media, and in this case the alternative media, has decided to put that out there to get people to think that that's what's happened. So we can't accuse. You can't accuse if it's not definitely true. David Copperfield. It says, Joburg said that she met famed magician David Copperfield, saying that she observed him to be a friend of Epstein's. Then you've got Naomi Campbell, the famous model, who flew on Epstein's private jet, according to previously released revealed logs from pilot David Rogers. In 2019, Campbell admitted she knew Epstein, saying, I was introduced to him on my 31st birthday by my ex-boyfriend, the Italian businessman, Flavio Briatore, it says, who had been convicted of fraud. He was always front and center at Victoria's Secret shows. Now, that's interesting because if you watch the Decker, the doco, I don't want to give out any spoilers, but one of the main people that financed Epstein was the owner of Victoria's Secret. So Epstein was always trying to get onto models and people that were wanting to be models. So he was part of that era as well, which is obviously how Naomi Campbell met him. Anyway, so moving on, it says Kevin Spacey, who Joanna Joburg denied meeting, but travelled to Africa with Bill Clinton on Epstein's plane in 2002. How long has this been going on for, people? Donald Trump. Now, they had to put that in. They had to put that in because they've got a Democrat, Bill Clinton. They've got to put a Republican in that's trying to go for president again. Apparently, he just won the Iowa, the Iowa, sort of like a Republican nomination. If you win that one, you're going to go on to be the Republican representative for the presidency. And he won it. So, and my prediction, people, I'm going to say it again. It's a bad thing, but it's my prediction. If he even gets close to winning, they will assassinate him. They'll do it because they're not going to let him get in and go nationalistic on their agenda, okay? Because he did a lot of damage to these poor old globalists before, and they're not going to let him do it again. They'll Epstein him. Watch it. So it says, Donald Trump, who notably did not receive a massage at Epstein or Maxwell's request. It says, update. The Jeffrey Epstein files have been unsealed. As expected, former President Bill Clinton is prominently featured as John Doe 36. And it says, for another good look at this, the first of several Epstein doc dumps to come, check out the reaction area. I'm just going to click on that because I don't think I actually did when I put the story up. I didn't see that list. So it's got the Epstein files, John Doe's identified. And this is from the 4th of January, 2024. And it's got witness. Epstein described Bill Clinton's preference for young girls. And it says, we finally know the names of some of the most important John Doe's referenced during the litigation in Virginia Guffrey versus Ghislaine Maxwell. Those who are accused of being alleged perpetrators and witnesses to Jeffrey Epstein's criminal conduct. Earlier this evening, numerous documents were otherwise unsealed in the Guffrey case, marking the beginning of the end of a long battle for documents and information, and really accountability that started with Mike Chernovich's efforts back in 2017. It's got tonight's batch of documents made available for download by Seamus Bruner. It's just part of the records that will be unsealed from the Guffrey case. There are numerous other records, including witness depositions, motions, filings which are yet to be published at the court's docket. We anticipate more salacious materials and more damning allegations against John Doe perpetrators to be released soon. It's got Bill Clinton's connection to Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell is no secret, and that's true. Epstein and Clinton had a suspiciously close friendship over the years, and Clinton even invited Ghislaine Maxwell to his daughter's wedding. So you can see it's obvious that this is embedded in politics, in main corporations, in globalist elites. It's obvious. Now that Epstein's dead, it seems to me that there is a list that they do not want us to see. So reading on, it's got, as noted by attorney and journalist Technofog of The Reactionary. So that's what that link was. It was called The Reactionary. It's on the story. I put it up on conspiracyoz.com. So this is all up now. It says, apart from the defendant Ghislaine Maxwell and Epstein, former President Clinton is a key person who can provide information about his close relationship with the defendant and Mr. Epstein. What's more, Bill allegedly likes them young. One Epstein accuser also listed George Mitchell, Gilles-Luc Brunel, Bill Richardson, Marvin Minsky, and couldn't remember the names or several other individuals. And it's got, because that's how it went. They instructed, oh, hang on, this is actually going into a transcript by the look of it. I think I've put a transcript up and it's not quite even. I can just see that lots of it's missing. I have to go back in and fix that. I just noticed it now, people. Sorry about that. But still, you can click on the main story anyway. If you go to right back to the top, just click on the zerohedge.com one. This is the actual, and then you'll see the full transcripts as they are. Because obviously it didn't resize properly on WordPress.com, which is another reason why the website has major limitations. But I'd rather concentrate on the podcast. Anyway, so going back into it, it's going, this is what I was trying to read. This is from Technofog. It's on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it. January the 4th, 2024. It says Jeffrey Epstein files have been unsealed. We have the documents. And it says we start with Bill Clinton, John Doe 36, whose disposition was essential to provide info on his relationship with Maxwell and Epstein. And there's a little cut, like a newspaper clipping that they've put in there, but I don't know if I can actually see that. I'm going to go to the, it comes up on the Twitter thing pretty pretty easy to see. It says, in a 2011 interview, Ms. Guthrie mentioned former President Bill Clinton's close personal relationship with the defendant and Jeffrey Epstein. While Ms. Guthrie made no allegations of illegal actions by Bill Clinton, Ms. Maxwell in her disposition raised Ms. Guthrie's comments about President Clinton as one of the obvious lies to which she was referring to her in public statement and formed the basis of this suit. Apart from the defendant and Mr. Epstein, former President Clinton is a key person who can provide information about his close relationship with defendant and Mr. Epstein and disprove Ms. Maxwell's claim. So he's going to end up in the hot seat very soon, people. I mean, because everyone knows now and they're going to want answers. And it says, testimony from one witness. Did Jeffrey ever talk to you about Bill Clinton? Answer. He said one time that Clinton likes them young, referring to girls. So there you go. That's a statement from a witness. Whether it's true or not, that remains to be seen. And then it goes on to show more transcripts, which I put up too, but obviously they've only come up half. And it's got by Miss Menninger. Okay, name the other politically connected and financially powerful people that Ghislaine Maxwell told you to have sex with. And the answer, again, I'm going to tell you they. She doesn't want to name them because that's how it went. They instructed me to go to George Mitchell, Jean-Luc Brunel, Bill Richardson, another prince, and I don't know his name, a guy that owns a hotel, a really big, large hotel chain. I can't remember which hotel it was, and Marvin Minsky. There, you know, another foreign president, I can't remember his name, he was Spanish. There's a whole bunch of them that I just, it's hard to remember them, all of them. You know, I was told to do something by these people constantly. Told me my whole life revolved around just pleasing these men and keeping Ghislaine and Jeffrey happy. Their whole lives revolved around sex. They called massages sex. They called modeling sex. It says, and then they keep questioning, I asked you for the names of the people. Are you going to tell me any of their names or is this all of them? I'm trying to think. That's the answer I'm trying to give you. It's that it's so hard to just keep naming and naming and naming. So that was just one, obviously, testimony from a witness. And they just got other ones like the Michael Jackson one where it said, no, he did not do any massages. This is another one. Victim Virginia Guthrie states she slept with billionaire Tom Pritzker, another John Doe, once. Pritzker is a member of the prestigious Aspen Institute and executive chairman of Hyatt's Hotel. So he's probably the hotel guy she was going with. And then it moves on to more allegations from Virginia Guthrie. It seems like she's going to be targeted big time, people. She was trafficked by Epstein and Maxwell to have sex with Prince Andrew. Maxwell directed her to have sex with billionaire hedge fund manager Glenn Dubin. And it goes on to talk about that too. So you can read all this. There's just tons of it there, people. It goes on to just name all these big wingers. But we don't really know until it actually, till they're actually charged. Otherwise, and they said here, it's got, this is, I think it's, is it Guthrie again? She kept a diary. And the diary was something like, let me see if it is her first. We also learned that the accuser, Virginia Guthrie, testified that she kept a journal filled with the names of men involved with Epstein. And it's 300 pages, and apparently she burned the book. Isn't that interesting, people? So there you go. And it's got Trump cleared by the Epstein list dump. And it's got question, it's got, and an increase corresponding to massages you were given to guests, correct? Yes. Did any of the quotes from which you gave a massage mention they expected something sexual? No. Did they ask you to engage in sexual contact with and you refused? And it's got, and this is in the court case, and it's got Marvin Minsky, ? I don't know that. George Lucas, ? No. Donald Trump, no. So you can see they're going through the list of the who's who of did what. It's getting really dirty and murky, people. The mud will stick on some of these people soon, but who knows? And it's also got, there was one I did see that sort of made me go, what? And then I wasn't surprised. It's got, I'll see if I can find it, one sec. Actually, I'll just add this bit that's also in it. So definitely click that link at the top of the story at conspiracyhells.com, the main zerohedge.com list, and that'll take you straight to all this because this is far more clear and there are more links within links. So you really need to go to websites that can support Twitter feeds and things like that, which mine doesn't. So it's got here, as noted earlier, the documents include over 150 names, which stemmed from a civil lawsuit against Ghislaine Maxwell, who is currently serving a 20-year prison sentence on sex trafficking and other charges for participating in Epstein's enterprise. So there you go. So this is why they're going to want to try and get at her before these 150 defendants try to start naming all these people, because they're going to need her to say that's true or it isn't. So this is the linchpin. They're going to have to try and get rid of her so that none of this stuff can go to court. This is why she's probably going to end up the same way, swinging from a bedpost. But it says here now, just this is a name I was looking for. This is I shouldn't laugh. Okay, this story's on themirror.com, or themirror.com. It actually names some people too, but this is just the story I wanted to read. It's got Matt Groening's crusty feet nearly made Epstein's sex slave throw up during foot rub. You've probably heard about this story anyway, people, but it says, Jeffrey Epstein, accused of Virginia Roberts, claimed she was asked to give The Simpsons creator Matt Groening a foot rub on Epstein's Lolita Express jet. And you think, okay. And it just goes on in to say how horrible it was and she couldn't stand his feet, blah, 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 blah. But then it goes on to name other people, and there's more. There's a full list that's just come out too, by the way, people, just a few weeks ago. The list has got some big names on there, people. Now, none of them have been accused of anything yet, but they're on the list, and the list is literally hundreds. But I just saw some on there, and I went, oh, please, no. Now, Matt Groening, I'm a Simpsons fan. So as soon as I saw that, I went, ah, this is not good. But still, not accused, hasn't done anything wrong, not yet, we don't know of. Anyway, it goes on to mention in the story, it says Roberts, who alleges years of sexual abuse while working as a travelling masseur for Epstein after being approached by Maxwell in the summer of 2000, says she washed Groening's feet. The claims in no way suggest any wrongdoing or involvement in Epstein's crimes by Groening's. And it's got, it comes as a newly released documents reveal a whole host of Hollywood names, including Leonardo DiCaprio, Cameron Diaz, Kevin Spacey, Kate Blanchett, and also among mentions in previously secret documents that were unsealed on Wednesday, Bruce Willis is also mentioned in the case. And it goes on, the list is actually quite huge. But this is dangerous, people. Now you can see that there could be a lot of dirt about to get flung. I mean, this is very, very dangerous, people, because then all the whole of society has been built up by the illusion of Hollywood. And I've said before many times that Hollywood, it's a wand. It's like a magician's wand to keep you in spellbound. This is all occulty stuff, but still, when you think about it, that's exactly what it does. So it goes on. The names, I'll put it up with probably the story I've just put up. I'll put up the names and that story, and you can read it. But it's like, this ain't going away, people. This list is going to get bigger and bigger. And remember, the people on the list know other people on the list, and the list gets bigger and bigger. There could be tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people on these lists. And the chain of young girls could just go on for literally thousands as well. So you don't know how big this whole thing is, but they're going to try and whittle it down, because remember, a lot of these people are in power, and they're going to try and squash this as quick as they can. Anyway. Okay, the first COVID rat of Oz today will be Professor Michael Kidd. And a lot of people go, I've never heard of him. Well, that's interesting you say that, because during the pandemic, he did pop up a lot, not as much as the others, but a very pivotal position where he could, hide behind in the shadows, but dictate from very high up. I mean, he was one of the highest medical sort of operatives, controllers. Just a step down from Brendan Murphy, I'd say, who was actually the head of the medical establishment in Australia federally. But so I go to his typical old Wikipedia, and I tell you what, people, you read it and it goes, where's the COVID stuff? Not there. Lots of accolades and did this good and helped with the TGA and also worked with the WHO in Canada. Oh yeah, he's been around, but not really much mention of this guy that was apparently right in the centre of COVID-19 in Australia. In fact, called back from the job from the World Health Organization to come and work in Australia to, you know, sort us all out. So the Wikipedia more or less just says that he's an Australian medical practitioner, academic and author. He is Professor of Global Primary Care and Future Health Systems at the University of Oxford. So, you know, not really based here anymore, but wait, let me read on. Director of the Centre for Future Health Systems at the University of New South Wales. He is a past president of the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners. And you go, ah, a past president of the World Organisation of Family Doctors and former Deputy Chief Medical Officer with the Australian Government Department of Health and Aged Care. So he gets around. He's been rewarded and he's perfect for the job. Obviously, that's why he got it. Now, it just goes on about professional career and this and that, but I'm looking for COVID people. It even mentions he was a professor at the Global Primary Care with the Southgate Institute for Health, Equity and Society at Flinders University and as Professor and Chair of the Department of Family and Community Medicine at the University of Toronto. And it says in 2018, he was appointed as Director of the World Health Organization Collaborating Centre on Family Medicine and Primary Care. And you say, say no more. But wait, there is a little bit more. In 2020, he was appointed Principal Medical Advisor and Deputy Chief Medical Officer with the Department of Health Australia and served in this role until June 2023. So right under Greg Hunt. More or less probably sideways from Brendan Murphy, but really very high up, very silent partner in the whole crime of COVID hoax. So I'm just going to find the part, see if there is any mention of COVID, because I've already read it and I hardly saw anything to do with COVID. This guy was a face of COVID during the pandemic as well. But there's nothing here, people. They're actually going over how good he is and how many books he's written, and that's it. It's really not much else to see, which is such a shame because this guy is a very important figure because he was there from the beginning, even before pandemic. All right. So anyway, I'll just get into it now. So that's the Wikipedia. It takes you nowhere. It goes round in circles and nothing to see here. So I go to the first story. Now, this is from neoskosmos.com. Looks like some sort of Greek site. Neoskosmos.com came out on the 5th of March, 2021. Professor Kidd, the nation's GP, calls on all adults to get vaccinated. And it says Professor Michael Kidd, Australia's acting chief medical officer, is a world expert on primary care. He is the nation's GP, as he says. So there you go. Professor Kidd is confident that the vaccines will fight COVID-19. Really? A WHO operative. A virus that has killed over 2.5 million people globally and crammed ICU beds across Europe, Northern Latin America, Asia and Africa. It's got optimism and confidence. I am optimistic. What we know from these vaccines is that they protect people from developing serious illness and the risk of death from COVID-19, Professor Kidd said. That's why the death rate went up and the jabbing started, people. Professor Kidd began his significant career in the 1980s in Melbourne, then moved to Australia in the 1990s. He was involved in the primary care response to HIV/AIDS. So, back in the day, just like Fauci, same team again all these years later. He was the president of the World Australian College of General Practitioners, president of the World Organization of Family Doctors, and director of the World Health Organization Collaborating Center for Family Medicine and Primary Care based at the University of Toronto. What a hero. It says in late 2019, he was to return to Australia to lead the national primary care reforms, and he was scheduled to arrive in 2020, but Brendan Murphy, then Australia's CHO, called and said, look, things look like they're going to get very serious. Do you think you might be able to come back to Australia sooner? So it's got, asked about the 12 months it took to find a COVID-19 vaccine, in contrast to the decades it has taken for other vaccines to be developed, Professor Kidd calls it an extraordinary moment in time and brands it a modern medical miracle. Of course it has. So you wanted to get that in your arms before you woke up. It says the pandemic is raging out of control. This is back in 2021, remember, people? In many countries, he says. And then points to the 270 million people who have received at least a first dose of the vaccine without any ill effects. vaccines save lives, and they have been doing so for a very long time. Australia is one of the highest rates of childhood immunisation, so expect those kids to be jabbed up, and we'll see how long they last. And then reading on, it says, the nation's GP is a staunch believer of that great euphemism from Hippocrates, I got it right, do no harm. It says, we have a very stringent process of regulation in Australia. That's why they never checked anything at TGA. They've rubber stamped it. The Therapeutic Goods Administration is one of the strongest regulators of medicines and vaccines in the world. Well, when it's doing its job. There have been no corners cut. Well, it's a big round circle, isn't it? Professor Kidd assured Neos Cosmos. The same rigorous approach which regulators take in this country to any new medicine or any new vaccine has been taken with these COVID-19 vaccines. They didn't even check them, people. They just rubber stamped them because the Americans said, it's fine. The nation's GP worries that some Greek Australians, because this is a Greek publication, people, as I thought, especially elderly ones, might be influenced by irrational and dangerous scepticism of conspiracy theorists. this is just ridiculous. But there you go. There's the guy. Here's what he says. He goes, get a quote from him. He goes, everyone, especially the elderly, need to be vaccinated. This is a terrible disease. As a society, we have a responsibility to do what Aristotle called good. If I don't vaccinate my children and I just rely on everybody else vaccinating their children, then I'm not fulfilling my role as a member of a community, not for the Aristotelian good. I mean, basically, these people have jabbed the kids up too. So they've got nothing to look forward to either. And it says, and this is what he says, every adult must get vaccinated for the common good. So Professor Kidd wants every adult immunised in Australia by the end of October. This is back in 2021. Pfizer and AstraZeneca have been contracted to produce 20 million doses. And that number will be boosted by the onshore production by CSL in Melbourne and tens of millions of doses for distribution. The clot shots. It's just crazy that people thought this is what's going to save us. When in actual fact, COVID wasn't really that deadly. I mean, it was deadly, but if it left alone, it would have just phased out. It would not have, because the transmission still was affected with the jab. And then the jab didn't work at all. And they all scratched their head saying, well, it must be a variant, which I put up a story. Two variants at conspiracyholes.com. If you care to read it, then you'll see what I think of it. It's actually an ABC story, and you're not really reading it now that I think about it. You're just going to look at the meme I put up, the meme that goes with it. And I'm still collating all that to people in a folder, and then I'll release it. It's a giant collage of funny stuff, because there were so many funny things over the years, but most of the focus will actually be during the pandemic, because that's the point. Got to have a laugh at this stuff, people. You've got to start realising that we have to get back to the way we were. We can't let the globalists drive a wedge between us and, looking on the brighter side of life, because that's really what they're trying to do here. So it says here, Professor Kidd wants every adult immunised in Australia by the end of October. And it says Australia has 14 contracts with vaccine manufacturers like Novavax, which has a vaccine going through its clinical trials now, which is called the Australian public, probably, and COVAX, for which the government is providing funding to assist in the rollout of vaccines in low-income countries as part of Australia's aid contributions. How do you like that part? It says, the professor has no time for vaccine nationalism. Vaccine nationalism. Stressing the need to support the rollout of vaccines in countries all around the world. Yeah, give it all to them. Our best defense against the variants, here we go, is to have the majority of people vaccinated, even though the variants mutate and then the vaccine doesn't work. And he's got, which will prevent the virus from spreading and prevent the opportunity of the virus to develop through the variants. Really? He said, it's just a quote, like the flu vaccine, Professor Kidd believes we may be getting a COVID-19 booster every year or every 6 months. This guy's a creep, people. I told you, he's sort of not well known, but I'll help to remedy that. And it says COVID-19 is not an old person disease. Remember when they all thought it was only for very elderly people and they were the only ones dying? It's because they had comorbidities. Well, it looks like even COVID-19 can take you out as well. It's got Professor Kidd rejects the idea that COVID-19 impacts only the elderly and people with underlying health issues. Really? We have young people here and overseas who have died from COVID-19. Sure, the risk of serious disease and death increases as you get older, but that doesn't mean that we haven't had serious disease in young people in their 20s who ended up in intensive care units, or people in their 20s and 30s dying. Interesting, right after the jab, all the 20 and 30-year-olds start dying and getting sick, and they're saying it's COVID, even though they're jabbed, and they say that it works. Well, who's right? I don't know. It says we also see the phenomenon of long COVID, where the people who have been infected have recovered from their initial infection but continue to have symptoms for many months. And we don't know if that's going to last for years. They'll all stick their head up for compensation, people. That's it. It says a nation's GP compares the COVID-19 vaccine to the flu vaccine. Funny that. We can get the flu and pass it on, but flu vaccine stops us from becoming seriously ill. Well, I like the part about we can get the vaccine and get the flu and pass it on, but the flu vaccine stops us from getting seriously ill. So straight away, they're more or less saying, well, if you get the jab, it may not stop the transmission, but it will stop the becoming seriously ill. In the end, they said it just doesn't even work, people, at all. As soon as they said the variant came in, it's like, well, we don't have anything for that. And then they're off the hook, and along goes the vaccine before that, killing people off, and they can just say, well, it's a new variant that's doing it, not that. So reading on, it says, Professor Kidd, like many, has endured the absence of his elderly mother who is in aged care during Victoria's second lockdown. What a guy. This has been an incredibly difficult year for families not to be able to come together, and I share that experience. I was separated from my mum for most of last year. I was unable to see her in aged care facility. Like, that's a problem. I feel the agony of many families right across Melbourne. Really, this is one of the guys that made those rules. It says, Professor Kidd reflects on the tragedy of 150 Greek elderly among the 800 Victorians who died from COVID-19. Well, there you go, and doubles down. Every adult must get vaccinated, especially if we care for our loved ones. We should commit to Aristotle's good. Is he a bit of an occultist or something, people? But there you go. Well, could have been Nostradamus, so maybe not so bad. Moving on. Next story, it says Australia's Deputy Chief Medical Officer, Professor Michael Kidd, explains how COVID-19 continues to pose a challenge for Greater Sydney in particular. He remains concerned about children under 12 who can't be vaccinated and the risk posed by adults refusing to take the jab. So this guy was a finger pointer to people. As much as you might not remember him, he was amongst all the finger pointers. He is a COVID rat of Oz. So the title of that article is, I'm just going to scroll back up, Why Are Sydney's COVID Cases Rising Despite Lockdowns and Vaccination? Professor Michael Kidd explains. This is from sbs.com.au, so a government prostitute media, an arm of it. So it says here, Professor Kidd blamed the Delta variant of COVID-19 for the sharp rise in new infections, even though, it doesn't stop being infected or transmitting the disease, people. That's what they're not telling you just yet. It says, despite the strict lockdowns in Greater Sydney and other parts of New South Wales, he particularly remains concerned about the safety of children under 12 and also believes Australia will not achieve herd immunity. Well, they know it's never going to let them do that, people. In an interview with SBS Hindi, Professor Kidd urged people to adhere to the public health restrictions. This is a real challenge with the Delta variant, which, as we know, is more contagious and easily transmitted from one person to another, Professor Kidd said. What we are seeing is if one person in the family is infected with the Delta variant, everybody in their household gets infected. The Delta variant is causing more serious disease in younger people than what we saw last year, he added. So here we go, push the variants. And then it says, urging all eligible people to take the COVID-19 vaccine, Professor Kidd denied rumours that authorities had manipulated data on the new infections to push more people towards vaccination. Well, who would have thought? That conspiracy theories are absolute nonsense and there is no truth to them. People need to be aware of the facts, and if you want to know where to find the facts about the pandemic, then go to the Australian Government's Department of Health website. And it's got, don't believe the nonsense that you may see on social media and other people share with you. Instead, go to the source of the facts and find out what actually happens. Yeah, right, say go to the government site. It says some members in New South Wales community had raised doubts after a sharp rise in the number of new infections despite lockdowns. Over the last 3 days, the state has been recording more than 600 cases a day. This is with the faulty PCR test, people. It says, Professor Kidd also commented on herd immunity, a concept much talked about these days across the world. Well, herd immunity actually exists without the vaccine. That's where people have knocked the disease on its head and have become immune, and then on it goes through the community. They're not talking about that. They're talking about herd immunity after you become a pincushion. That's what they're saying. Even though later on they went, actually, it's transmissible. Actually, it's still killing people. And of course, and then they went silent, didn't they, people? Then he goes on to say, we don't know what herd immunity looks like for COVID-19. We haven't seen any country which has achieved herd immunity. They never let natural herd immunity through people. They never gave you alternatives like ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. They needed shareholders, major shareholders, to make massive profits and double their wealth at your health expense. That's what happened, people. So it says, one of the problems we have at the moment is there are no vaccines licensed for use in children under the age of 12. Oh, that's terrible, isn't it, people? In Australia, we just licensed the Pfizer vaccine for children aged between 12 and 15. These people wanted to stamp their needle into everybody's arm. They would have probably jabbed dogs and cats if they could have. Anything to sell a jab to a government and ka-ching for the major shareholders. That's what ended up happening. So it says, reading on, he says, we are rolling that out as a priority for children with chronic health concerns, the very ones that will die from it, people, with comorbidities, and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children, Professor Kidd added. It's just insane how people thought the other way. Oh, they're trying to save us for the first time. No. And it says, when asked how confident he was about When asked how confident he was about 80% of the population being fully vaccinated by the end of the year, Professor Kidd said it's really up to residents to get themselves vaccinated. So this is when they started realizing it isn't going to work. Remember, right after Delta came what? Omicron. And after Omicron, it faded because they realized the public isn't buying it anymore. That's what happened. So it says, reading on to finish the article up, he goes, I'm worried about 20% or 30% of people who will not be vaccinated at the time when we start to open Australia up. Oh, how sad. He says, because those people will still be at risk of catching COVID-19, even though people are still catching it, even when they're vaccinated people. Remember they said, oh, two shots isn't enough, you need three. Oh, three shots is enough, you need four. And on it went. And it says, because those people will still be at the risk of catching COVID-19, becoming seriously unwell and dying. There's your fear factor, people. And I don't want that to happen to anybody in our country, says a WHO operative working for the globalist elites. He says, reading on, it says, Professor Kidd added that they are following the research being carried out in Australia and overseas on booster doses and how long protection lasts from the currently available vaccines. Well, it didn't last, did it, at all? And he says, one of the things about COVID-19 is that we don't know what will happen over the coming weeks and months, he said. Well, I can tell you now in hindsight that it's good that you did a runner, because he did. So we're getting to that. Couldn't find death threats on this one, people. I did look, but as I said, in his Google, nothing about COVID. So we're seeing someone that's sort of protected. It's all I can think of. Moving to the next story. There's only a few on this guy. There's not too much. 20th of June 2023. So we skipped the whole year. We've jumped through 2022. Professor Michael Kidd to step down from the DOH. The former RACP president, who was one of the most high-profile officials dealing with the COVID-19 response, is moving on. Another rat left the ship, people. This is also from www.1.racgp.org.au. It says, former GP and Deputy Chief Medical Officer Professor Michael Kidd is leaving the Department of Health and Aged Care. Funny that, people. Did his job, got his gold and ran. Professor Kidd, who was the RACGP president for 4 years, from 2002 to 2006, has been announced as an inaugural director of the new UNSW Centre for Future Health Systems. Now, this is important to understand what's going on here. This is when he quit and he's gone into some sort of a software program for health. And then it gets very clear again in a minute. It says, it is being established to promote sustainable. God, don't you love that word, people? equitable and person-centred healthcare for all people in Australia. Wow, he sounds like the Wizard of Oz, or at least the Wizard of Health. It says the UNSW website declares the centre will lead to transformational change of the Australian health system, which it describes as mired in the centuries of historical and often outdated practices. Well, wearing masks and telling people to get jabbed and staying home and locking them in there, that's pretty outdated. So it says Professor Kidd has also been appointed Professor of Global Primary Care and Future Health Systems at the University of Oxford, which is working in partnership with the UNSW. Well, of course it is. It says the Deputy Chief Medical Officer has become a widely known face in his official capacity responding to the pandemic, with many GPs likely to recognise him from his role hosting the COVID-19 updates for primary care webinar. It says, prior to the onset of the pandemic, Professor Kidd had been based in Canada, where he acted as a consultant for the World Health Organization, while he is also a past president of the World Organization of Family Doctors. And then, of course, it ends with, Professor Kidd was included in the recent King's Birthday Honours list and became an officer of the Order of Australia. They always get rubber stamped and bags of gold and patted on the back and wait around for the next pandemic. That's basically. Moving on to the next story on Mr. Professor Kidd, who's probably unknown by most people out there, but I'll help to rectify that. I will. When I put up the class of COVID-19, the Rats of Oz, the COVID Rats of Oz, and you'll clearly see the face whenever you want to see it, if you want to see it. Now we're getting a little bit more up to date, 29th of October 2023. It's entitled, We Need to Talk About the Pandemic, Professor Michael Kidd. And this is from www.1.racgp.org.au. It says, Australia's former Deputy Chief Medical Officer who stepped into the role as COVID unfolded opened the last day of the WANCA with a moving speech. That's because he moved on. It says, the power of the family doctor, the devastating impact of the pandemic, and the chance to learn from it were the themes spreading through Professor Michael Kidd's keynote speech on the closing day of the WONCA World Conference. He's a bit of a world guy, isn't he, people? And he says, at times you needed to put your own health and well-being at risk and that of your loved ones in order to deliver essential care. This is a guy that was behind closed doors dictating that you couldn't go anywhere because he was really protecting you. It says, especially in the early days, he says, when personal protective equipment was in short supply around the world and before vaccines became available. It's funny, but in the beginning of the pandemic, and I remember all this very clearly, everyone was panicking because all these video clips were coming from China where people were just dropping dead from catching the COVID, which was absolutely fabricated. So everyone jumped in and wanted to get the protective gear and get jabbed up as quick as possible. And so there was this great exodus towards these chemists and hospitals and everything to save us, COVID rats, save us. And all they did was tunneling you towards Pfizer and all the other ones with the major shareholders drooling at the other end, watching the ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching go up and up and up. That's what really happened, people. That's actually what these guys were put in place to do. So, you know, caring about the general public, yeah, right. So it says, reading on, it says, each of our nations owes you a huge debt of gratitude and appreciation. Professor Kidd also looked back at the history of the WINCA. It sounds like the YMCA, doesn't it? Noting that the organisation now represents around 500,000 family doctors in more than 130 countries around the world. So that's who he commandeered. These are the 500,000 doctors out there spruiking what they're told to say. He said they would account for more than 2 billion patient consultations each year. So all the yes men passing on the buck and also passing on the vaccine, as well as making a buck. What am I saying? He said, what have we got? That's the scope of our vital work and our contributions to healthcare in each of our countries, he told delegates in Sydney. But we need to be doing even more. And at a time when we're seeing falling interest in our profession in some countries. I wonder why. We need to boost. What does he mean, boosters? No, he said we need to boost that because we have over 7 billion people sharing this planet with us. With us? What are they, a separate species, general practitioners? I didn't know that, people. everybody deserves to have their own family doctor. It's a bit like a pet robot or something. Everyone needs to have one. Well, you know, one day in the future, that may not be too silly, because I'll tell you what his new job is, people. And then you'll go, what? So Professor Kidd went on to share behind-the-scenes insights into how he found himself leading the primary care response to COVID-19 in Australia. So he's leading it. This is a guy that was at the helm, people. Have you even heard of this guy? And so I'm getting to the new vocation he's in now, but I'll just get through this story and then one more. Actually, it's the next story after this. So I'll just fly through this. It says, cutting short a role with the World Health Organization in Canada, sad, Professor Kidd became Australia's Deputy Chief Medical Officer in early 2020 and was asked to develop the principles of the primary care response with an almost immediate deadline. He said, this was my first all-nighter in a very long time. And here it says, Professor Kidd also talked about the widespread introduction of telehealth. That's what I'm getting into, people, next, what I'm talking about. Referencing former Federal Health Minister Greg Hunt's description of the move being a decade's worth of reform in 10 days. So that's what the pandemic did. It forced everyone online, and here these guys are rubbing their hands together going, wow, something that normally would have took 10 years took what he said would normally take 10 years only took 10 days. So there you go. This is a guy that just can't wait to tell the globalists how great everything's going and how they're ka-chinging all the way to the bank. And then it just goes on. He just goes on to thank everyone, blah, blah, blah. But you can see straight away, oh, actually, this is a longer story than I thought. So I'm just going to go through it and see if there's some. He's just talking about what he did in the pandemic and how he worked so hard to make sure that everyone did exactly as he said. And it's just going on about that. So I don't really see anything more in there that's worth repeating. Now the next story. Professor Michael Kidd AO takes up, because that's up a new role, because, you know, he's an Order of Australia. This guy's a big wig now, people. This story came on the 12th of December 2023, so not that long ago, just over a month ago. This is what he's doing now, people, and you will laugh. Medical leader Professor Michael Kidd AO has been appointed to the Telstra Health Board. I'll say that again, the Telstra Health Board, the government arm of the communications people with health. Well, of course, telehealth. Think about it. Professor Kidd was most recently, Deputy Chief Medical Officer and Principal Medical Advisor for the Australian Government, in addition to his role as the Foundation Professor of Primary Care Reform at the Australian National University. Could he get any more accolades? His chest must be weighted down with all those medals that he's just been offered from all these institutions. It must be really hard to even walk around. So it says, Professor Kidd brings over 30 years' experience as a leader in medical education. Well, of course, as a clinician, digital health researcher, and educator to the Telstra Health Board. Did you even know they had a health board, people? He is also a trusted advisor to the World Health Organization, of course he is, and to governments in Australia and internationally on topics including digital health, implementations. This is what he's about. So basically, he is going to be the head of the telehealth in Australia to force you to go to a doctor online, who will then dictate to you what you should not do. In other words, they're going to try and get rid of the face-to-face. Eventually, they'll just use an AI form doctor. They won't have to pay him either. They'll say, can we get that prototype AI guy, what's his name, John Doe, to be Dr. John Doe, and, you know, the patients can go to him. Don't laugh. This could happen. We're that close to jobs being shifted over to AI simply because businesses are trying to cut back, especially as a recession is coming. These are the things they're going to look at, people, because they're looking at the long term. They don't want to have to go through COVID or the financial crisis again. Okay, so everyone's going to be clamoring over each other to get the latest gadget that will give them this edge that they think they'll have. So there's really nothing more to read about him. It says Telstra Health, develops digital solutions for the health and aged care sectors in Australia and internationally. It is Australia's largest digital health technology company with a footprint across a spectrum of care, including primary care, aged care, hospitals, pharmacies, and developing whole of population health solutions. It is bringing together the expertise and capability in a connected way. So this is what it's all about. It's to make sure that, you know, your phone is connected to your heart, people. Obviously. Now, the next COVID rat of Oz off the rank is the former Premier of South Australia, Stephen Marshall. And it said that he went through politics. He's came from a background of furniture through his parents, and then went on to join into politics. So that's how he's come through the back door, in other words. And there's not much. There's no mention of COVID-19 in the entire Wikipedia. So he got out just before. And actually, when they interviewed him recently, he doesn't wear the glasses, people. So he's trying to look different from the guy that lost the election, because that's how he got out. And also the fact that he was in the middle of the pandemic. This is a guy that led South Australia at the pandemic, and there is no mention of it at all in his Wikipedia. This is how they whitewash it, people. They get their bag to gold and they move on, all right? So it just says basically here, I'm just trying to find anything to do with the anything to do with South Australia and the COVID thing, just like even one line, and I couldn't find anything in his Wikipedia, which I found extremely odd. But it says he had a bit of a falling out with the government because it looked like he'd been working for a corporation while he was the Premier. And they're saying he didn't receive any money, but you're not supposed to actually work for a corporation if you're actually a member of parliament. This is what they're all, and this only just came out. This only just, in his Wikipedia, it says November 2023, Marshall took up a position with the US. That's right, it's a US company, non-profit contractor, MITRE Corporation. So I'm just going to have a quick look at MITRE Corporation and just see who gave him a pat on the back for doing his bags of gold job during the pandemic, because he was a finger pointer too. And I'll get into those stories as well, one sec. So in the Wikipedia, it says that he went on to work, as I just mentioned, for a corporation called MITRE. It's a non-profit. Now, I looked them up to see who is this MITRE Corporation. And, of course, it's it's a non-profit, so there's nothing there. You can't trace it to anybody. There are key people there. But I thought, well, what do they do then? Why is he working for them? And because they were just virtually a think tank back in the 50s. That's what they would do with the radar and computer research at the MIT Lincoln Laboratory. And so everyone thought, what's that? Then it moved on and then moved into the field and started to become affiliated with the Ford Foundation, the RAND Corporation, United States Armed Forces. So I thought to myself, wow, this is military. Okay, so as it moved through, and this is where it gets very interesting. I didn't want to read through the whole history of MITRE because it really doesn't matter. But I wanted to know where this Stephen Marshall ended up and if he got a pat on the back and handed the bag of gold. So there's a section on that Wikipedia, and I will put it up with him, that actually says COVID-19. And I thought, oh, he might not have it written on his Wikipedia, but maybe it's written on their one. So I went straight down to COVID-19, and it says, in March 2020, now he was still running South Australia during that time, because that's when the COVID-19 pandemic hit, when the WHO said, this is a global emergency, get ready to get locked down and jackbooted. End of submission. And it says, MITRE published a white paper claiming the number of confirmed and reported COVID-19 cases significantly underrepresent the actual number of active domestic COVID-19 infections. So these guys wanted to be the, oh, we'll be your data, we'll tell you your data for you. And it says here, reading on, it goes, because this gets really down the rabbit hole. It says, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention funded $16 million MITRE-led project to create an enduring open source tool called SARA Alert for monitoring symptoms of Americans exposed to COVID-19. And it says, MITRE developed the free tool in collaboration with multiple national public health organizations, as well as state health agencies, in April 2020. It says, SARA Alert launched in Arkansas and was being tested in Danbury, Connecticut, as well as Northern Mariana Islands, with the data being maintained by the Association of Public Health Laboratories. Now, to get to push right onto it, this is where it says, since January 2021, MITRE has co-led a coalition known as the Vaccination Credential Initiative, which is composed of over 300 technology and healthcare organizations developing a technical standard for verifying vaccination and other clinical information. So that's where he's ended up, people. It's almost like a pseudo-spy information set up in the US, where they bring in these people like Stephen Marshall that have got bags of gold under the table, did the right thing, and get rewarded with a job that's even more controllable if another pandemic hits. So a reward, definitely not a backward step. So I just thought I'd point that out, people, because that just happened. But when you see the latest documentation that just came out on him to do with that appointment, they've got one on www.9news.com.au, which is a prostitute channel in Australia, as most people would know. And it's got former South Australian Premier admits to being paid as director while in office. That's very unethical, people. 30th of November 2023. It says former South Australian Premier Stephen Marshall has admitted to being paid as a non-executive director for the US Defence Research Organisation while still being an active member of Parliament. The Liberal MP declined to answer questions from Nine News Today and insisted his position with MITRE Corporation was above board. Well, that's because he's on the board. Under the Ministerial Code of Conduct, ministers must not take employment for a two-year period with any business organisation they had official dealings with in the last 12 months of office. We didn't care. Oh, I'm protected by the globals. I'll do what I like. And that's basically what he did, people. It says MITRE Corporation announced it would be moving into Lot 14 on North Terrace in a state government sponsoring agreement in 2021. So this is the Australian government and an American corporation that works for the military in America joining hands with Marshall at the helm of that. It says Marshall, who was Premier and Defence and Space Minister at the time, was quoted as part of the announcement. The Liberal MP told Nine News Today the Commissioner for Public Sector Employment had approved his board appointment. So that's what happens. When you're at the top, people, no one can stop you and do whatever you like. You just do what you want. And people will go, you can't do that. Well, I just did. So rules for us and no rules for them. So let's see how he won his badge of honour as a COVID rat of Oz. It says abc.net.au. Pfizer coronavirus vaccine to be rolled out in South Australia as early as Monday, the Premier says. This is way back then, people. 17th of February, 2021. abc.net.au. It says South Australian Premier Stephen Marshall says the rollout of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine in the state will begin very early next week. The South Australian government aims to vaccinate 1,700 people in the first week, all frontline workers at Adelaide Airport and in the Meadie Hotel system. So they're all the guinea pigs. The federal government will distribute vaccinations for residents and staff in aged care and disability facilities in South Australia. About 4,000 doses of the vaccine will arrive in South Australia this weekend. The state government is aiming to do 12,000 vaccinations in the first 3 weeks of the program. And it says those vaccinations will be received over the weekend. We expect this to roll out very, very smoothly. It says the freezers are now in place both here and at the Royal Adelaide Hospital and the Flinders Medical Centre. It's got Central Adelaide Local Health Network Executive Director of Nursing, Rebecca Badcock, said staff were being provided with detailed information ahead of receiving the vaccine next week. So this is when it all happened, people. When people, and it says, we're seeing a generally a lot of enthusiasm because people really thought it was going to save them. They actually lined up, elbowing each other the way to get the jab. So reading on in that story, it doesn't say much more, but it just says, just to quote Stephen Marshall at the time, because he's in the story, it's got, this is the very first resident infected with COVID-19 now in place at Tom's Court, Mr. Marshall said. So this is when the first person got infected. This is when the ball rolled and everyone said, what's going on here? And what is this thing that's come, this Chinese flu, this Wuhan flu? Is it anything bad? Well, things were about to change, people. So it said, Health Minister Stephen Wade said he had not been advised about whether it was a case or either the UK or the South African strain of the virus. So this is where everyone was up in the air thinking, well, who's got it? Just everyone, jab themselves and you'll be fine. That's basically what they were saying. That was that story. Next story, 22nd of February 2021, abc.net.au. Coronavirus vaccine rollout begins in SA as Premier rolls up sleeve for first jab. Well, he actually technically wasn't the first jab, was he? It says South Australia's Premier A health worker, a hotel guard, and police officer are among the first in the state to receive the coronavirus vaccine. Well, maybe he was. A total of 4,000 doses of the Pfizer vaccine have been distributed between the Royal Adelaide Hospital and Flinders Medical Centre. So this is the same story as the other one. And it's got Premier Stephen Marshall was the first to receive the vaccine, while Health Minister Stephen Wade, South Australia's Chief Public Health Officer Nicola Spurrier, and South Australian Police Commissioner Grant Stevens also rolled up their sleeves for the jab. It makes you wonder, people, doesn't it? Did they really know that what they were getting into? Or was the bag of gold so shiny that they just said, just do it? It's got Mr. Marshall said the delivery of the first vaccines marked an historic day for South Australia. It's funny that they told everyone to go and get it and it would save your life, but they were the first ones to get it. So maybe they did believe in the hype. Well, I wonder what they're believing now. Now they've got their gold and they're all jabbed up. Well, we'll just have to wait and see when the, the obituary columns start to clog up. So it's got here South Australian Chief Public Health Officer Nicola Spurrier said the vaccine was the first step in being able to return to a situation where we're not having to be worried about the threat of the pandemic. Never went away, people. People just ignored it. She's another one I'll be talking about too, because she played a big part in the South Australian COVID rat situation. Now, looking at the rest of the story, it looks like it's moving away from Stephen Marshall and more towards the police commissioner. Although it goes back to him here, I might just jump on this bit here. It's got, after a march through the city, this is when people were protesting against the vaccinations because they said they were enforced. A large crowd gathered at the steps of South Australian Parliament holding placards with slogans like, "My body, my choice." Mr. Marshall said he understood some people were nervous about the vaccine, but insisted it was safe. Some people are a bit anxious about vaccination. The simple facts of the matter are that the vaccination is safe and it's really important to get it, he said. The more people that are vaccinated, the safer we're going to be in South Australia. Not true. It's transmissible, even with the jab. Of course, they didn't know that because Pfizer didn't tell them that. Managing Director for Pfizer Australia New Zealand, Anne Harris, also urged Australians to embrace the vaccine, probably in brackets, for the major shareholders. No, that wasn't in there. Protecting ourselves means that we also protect our family, our workplace, our community, and ka-ching for Pfizer. No, I just put that in there. Pfizer is on track to deliver 20 million doses of its COVID-19 vaccine to Australia over the course of 2021, which will vaccinate 10 million citizens. They're right into it, people. They're like, just get it out. Just jab anything. Jab the tree. Jab a plant. Jab anything, but then ka-ching for Pfizer. That was the goal. Now, moving on to the next story. Around the same time, 21st of February 2021, abc.net.au, coronavirus vaccines arrive in South Australia ahead of first jabs for frontline health. So I think this is going to be pretty much the same story that we just read, but I'll just flip through it and see if there's anything different in this story that isn't in the other story. So it says here, and this is about the COVID-19, the anti-vaxxers. It's got Mr. Wade, who was the health minister there at the time, said the arrival of the Pfizer vaccines marked an exciting day for the state. But he also lashed out at the critics of the vaccine rollout, saying claims it would be mandatory were false. I really urge people not to listen to the anti-vaxxers. More than 200 million people have already been vaccinated against COVID-19 around the world. Didn't help. It's an important part of putting the pandemic behind us, probably side of us. Yeah, so, I mean, this is it. This is what they all believed, what they did, and people followed blindly because that's what they were told. So it doesn't really go on anything about Marshall anymore. It just goes on about the protesting that had started because people started to realise, hang on, you're becoming my life guidance where I can't go out, I can't do this, I can't say that, I can't eat this, I can't go there. Ridiculous people. People started to switch on, noticing that their whole lives were upside down. Now, there's another story coming out at the same time, abc.net.au, and it was called South Australian Public Servants Allowed to Get COVID-19 Vaccination While on the Clock. Government officials, first ones to get it, people. I'm not going to go through the story because I don't think it mentions Stephen Marshall much in there, and we really just want to keep the focus on him. But you can see that the ball was rolling. Now, it's got here. The next story came from 28th of July 2021. I do remember this story quite clearly too, people. abc.net.au. don't be a Gladys Kravitz and snitch. So a Gladys Kravitz and snitch says South Australian Premier as mask wearing goes wide. Now, you're probably thinking, what's a Gladys Kravitz? Well, I'll explain. South Australians have been urged not to dob in people without masks despite increased requirements because they may have a legitimate exemption under emergency management directions. Just remember all that, people dobbing people in for not wearing a mask? It says the state today emerged from one of its one-week lockdowns, but for the first time, mask wearing will be required, not mandatory, required by adults in schools and for all students indoors from year eight. That's what they did. They masked everybody up, including children. You're breathing in carbon dioxide for 8 hours. That's what they did to people. And it says, and above all, due to the ongoing risk of a COVID-19 breakout, masks are mandatory in indoor public places like shops and bars, personal care settings such as hairdressers and beauty salons, public transport, including taxis, rideshare vehicles, airports and airplanes, healthcare, high-risk settings, prisons, resident, what do they say everywhere? Residential aid care. It just sounds like they're mentioning everywhere. Is there anywhere you don't have? What about in the shower? Oh, they didn't mention shower. Oh, do you have to wear one in the shower? They didn't say anything, did they? When you go swimming. So it's got Premier Stephen Marshall said authorities did not want to see people turn into Gladys Kravitz from Bewitched. The nosy neighbour portrayed in Alice Pierce in the 1960 television sitcom. It says, we don't need to be the monitor for everybody's behaviour here in South Australia. We've got to look after ourselves and our family and our local community. He said, there are some very legitimate reasons why some people can't wear masks. So he goes on to look like the good guy. So he's got a big list of people who don't have to wear masks and why. And then it goes on to talks about deaf people. I mean, it just goes round in circles, but this is the sort of stuff that these people were advocating for. They just wanted everyone to get jabbed. It says, Mr. Marshall said a South Australian should get used to wearing face masks more often in public places because they would be key to relaxing restrictions in the future. He said health authorities were especially worried about the ongoing situation in New South Wales. I wonder if he was referring to Gladys Berejiklian when he said Gladys Kravitz, because she was a big finger pointer and she wanted you to wear masks, all of them. She was wearing one herself, and we're sort of glad about that. So it says, whether or not we keep some levels mandatory or whether it becomes strong advice, we really need to see where this goes over the next week. This is what they did to people. They put Australia on pause while they worked out what they were going to do to people next. And it says here, moving on to, now we're into January, the 3rd of January 2022, abc.net.au. Now, this story doesn't indicate Stephen Marshall, but he's obviously in the story. It says, SA Police Commissioner Grant Stevens among opposition leader Peter Malinauskas, I think that's how you say his name, he's now the Premier of South Australia, among state's COVID cases. It's got the man in charge of overseeing Australia's public health response to the COVID-19 pandemic has now been confirmed as positive case himself. These are the guys who got jabbed first, remember? He was one of them. South Australian Police Commissioner Grant Stevens holds the position of state coordinator and sits on the state's COVID-19 Transition Committee, which also includes Chief Public Health Officer Nicola Spirito, and we will get into her probably next week. In a statement, SA Police said the commissioner's diagnosis had been confirmed this evening. After feeling mild symptoms of a sore throat, the commissioner attended a testing site and this evening received a message to inform him of a positive PCR test to COVID-19. Remember how accurate those tests were, people? And then they gave everyone rat tests and how accurate they were? People are still doing it. They've days, like weeks off work because they did a test and said, well, I don't feel bad, but I got the dreaded lurky. It says, and I'm not going to read about him. I'll just see if I can find reference to Stephen Marshall. So it says here, a government spokesperson confirmed that Mr. Marshall was also not among the commissioner's close contacts. The Premier hasn't seen the police commissioner in person since Boxing Day press conference. Recent daily CRC, which is COVID Ready Committee, meetings and cabinet meetings have occurred virtually over Microsoft Teams to avoid the issue. So there it goes. So I think that's all he said in there. He's not really amongst the No, he's not. So I'll go on to the next story because we really want to stay focused on the Premier or the ex-Premier. Now we're moving to January, 17th of January 2022, abc.net.au. No COVID-19 deaths in South Australia as Premier touts infection peak. Because, you know, he knows. It says South Australia recorded no new COVID-19 related deaths yesterday, but the number of people being treated in hospital has risen. Of the people in hospital, 26 are in intensive care and 5 on ventilators. Remember all that when they were all on ventilators puffing away? It says Premier Steve Marshall said it was an indication the state was about the peak of the current wave, because he knows. And it's got, it gives an indication that we are at about the peak here in South Australia, he said. Mr. Marshall said the state's latest case numbers were below the 7-day average. This is all, the whole pandemic was throwing data at you back and forwards with the prescient media. That's it. But the big stick was leaning over everybody saying, do as you're told, because they had those dictatorial powers. Now, just reading on here, it's just going on about how many people they've jabbed. And it's got teachers union considers strike, because they were one of the first ones to be forced to get the jab, people. That's why the education system is destroyed in Australia at the moment. It says South Australia's Education Union will open a ballot for members tomorrow to vote on whether to go on strike over the state government's return to school plan. Under the plan, schools will open from January the 31st, but only for vulnerable students and the children of essential workers. Formal classes will begin on February the 2nd in person for reception in years 1, 7, 8 and 12. This is how ridiculous it got, people. There she is again, Nicola Spirea. She looks like some sort of, remember Medusa? This is the Gorgon that if you stared at her long enough, you would turn to stone. Yeah, don't stare too hard on the picture, people. Now, moving through it, I'm just looking again for any mention of Mr. Marshall, and that's his 2 cents worth. So it doesn't seem like he gets a lot to say in these stories, but he's going to get something to say on the next story. SA Premier rules out supporting 5-day COVID-19 isolation period at National Cabinet. January 20th, 2022. So here he is. He's getting ready. He's already lost popularity, people. He's about to get the flick. And then we know where he ends up. The South Australian Premier says his government will not be signing up to a 5-day isolation period for people who test positive to COVID-19. It says Premier Stephen Marshall has ruled it out for South Australia, saying the evidence is that people often continue to present with symptoms after 5 or even 7 days. He said he did not want infectious people out in the community. So there's a big stick, people. Don't you go out in that community until I tell you can. So in South Australia, the current mandatory isolation period for people who tested positive is 10 days. So every state had their own, well, we'll let you out for a little. It's like a jail sentence and you get paroled or let out earlier. It's just, this is how ridiculous. People got sick of this, people. They just went, no, not doing this anymore. That's it. And they knew that it was going to have an end to it, because there's no way people were going to stay in that limbo. So this is what the globalists would have realized at the time. But they got their QR coding. So ready for the next pandemic where they can actually, probably at gunpoint, tell people what to do. Wouldn't surprise me. We're all unarmed in Australia now. Don't forget that. So just reading on, it just goes on about quarantining and all that. So I'm not going to read any more on that story. It's probably about 6 more to get through, so I'll try and fly through them, because I'm actually, it looks like I'm not going to get a chance to do the third one, so I might include the third one next week, and I'm just going to see who it was, so you understand who I was going to say it was before I said who it was. And it was actually Andrew Barr, who's the Premier of the Australian Capital Territory. Now, he's still in office, so I'll probably do a shorter one on him simply because he's still there. We're waiting for him. In fact, people, he's the last one left that was during COVID as a premier. He's the last one left because Marshall was one of the first to go. And I think, just trying to remember last week, there was one that was the second last. I'll just have to try and remember who that was. But from last week's one, that would have been thinking about it. And actually, now that I am thinking about it, it wasn't John Gerard from last week. He was one of the medical guys. It was actually like someone like Daniel Andrews, the Premier of Victoria, who we actually thought would never leave. We actually thought he would never go, and he did. And then straight away they were talking to Andrew Barr saying, are you going to leave? I'll talk about him next week, people. But just to finish up with the one of the COVID rats that was the head of South Australia at the time of the pandemic has now been promoted to working for the US. Surprise, surprise. It says here, South Australia records two more COVID deaths, but Premier says active cases going down. So this is when all the hoo-ha started. 24th of January 2022, abc.net.au. Because people were not believing anymore. It says South Australia has recorded two COVID-linked deaths. Because that's what they were saying. You died with COVID, of COVID, or linked to COVID. This is how stupid it all got. And it says the two fatal cases are women in their 40s. They're not old people. And a man who was a resident of an aged care home. So it's got, it says two fatal cases. Yeah, okay. A woman in her 40s and a man who's a resident. So I get it right. The woman in her 40s, he says, Marshall says, understands, will be referred to the coroner, and the man in his 70s, Premier Stephen Marshall said. So it goes on to statistics again. Bang, bang, bang. Mr. Marshall said the current downward trend was very good news. This is certainly the lowest we've seen it for a very long period of time, he said. We're really reducing the active cases by thousands and thousands each week. They're probably just not reporting them anymore, people. That's right, basically what's starting to happen. People just don't want to do it anymore. So just flicking through the whole, because this is actually a long article, so I'm just figuring out what relevance it has. And it's to do with returning to school, so he's not there anymore. And this is when Omicron was coming in. So this is when they all realized, well, the jig's up. Next story. It says, one COVID-related death in South Australia as cases and hospitalizations drop. Now, this, I think the last story, I just think that I'm just going to try and get the date from the last story because I think this is around the same time. So it might have been just when only one person had died. So just let me read the story because it makes the story irrelevant then. South Australia has recorded one COVID-related death in the past 24 hours. A woman who died was over the age of 100. No, it's a different one. So it says South Australia Health said the woman who died was over the age of 100. And it says, now just reading on, and it's just statistics. Bang, bang, bang. That's it. Statistics. And it's, yep, and he's just going on about statistics. So people are realizing now the jig's up. And this guy has led them round and round in circles. So there was probably an election coming. And they are talking about that here. So I'll move on to the next story and we'll get closer to what actually happened to him. You'll love the next headline, people. abc.net.au. South Australian politics goes from the gutter into the sewer. Just 5 weeks out from the state election, 10th of February 2022. With just 5 weeks until the state election, South Australians would be forgiven for expecting politicians to be focusing on the big issues. For nearly 2 years, the state has been under an emergency declaration. COVID-19 has infected tens of thousands of people with 146 deaths in South Australia linked to the virus. Notice that key word there, people, linked. Not by the virus or from the virus, linked to the virus. Businesses have gone bust and the education of children has been repeatedly disrupted. Despite the challenges that South Australia faces in a post-pandemic world, we're already saying it, see, the state's political debate has descended to a tawdry level in the past 24 hours. In scenes described by SA Best MLC Frank Pagallo as a disgusting SHIT show, the major parties last night took to Parliament's upper house to a level of range of allegations against staff and MPs. They're all pointing at each other. Because while pandemic hit people for 2 years, they didn't have to govern properly. So it all fell apart. And as people came out of the pandemic and pulled the wool from their eyes, they realised that they had been done over. So it says, Treasurer Rob Lucas kicked off proceedings using the protection of parliamentary privilege to read a copy of an email he received from Maggie Dawkins, the wife of former Federal Labor Treasurer John Dawkins. In the email, it stated, recently, I've been made aware of party members and staffers who say they are afraid to provide information to the South Australian Police Joint Anti-Child Exploitation Team for fear of being labelled disloyal to the party. Apparently, they feel that if they contact police, they may spoil Labor's chances of winning the next state and federal election. So you can see already, what is that all about? That's left of centre. But guess what? That is a tool they're throwing at people like Donald Trump now with the Epstein affair. So it's no surprise. Politics is dirty, people. Very dirty. Anyway, reading on, so that's what they mean by from the gutter into the sewer, and they're all pointing. So they're just pointing fingers, and there's nothing about Marshall. So next story, it looks like he's about to be gone, people. And here we go, abc.net.au, 20th of March, 2022. So this is a year after the whole pandemic thing went mad and left the centre. With all the different variants and the finger pointing, it says outgoing SA Premier Stephen Marshall who stepped down as Liberal leader after election defeat. No surprises there, people. 21st of March, 2022, abc.net.au. And it says outgoing South Australian Premier Stephen Marshall says he will resign the state Liberal Party leadership following last night's election loss. Mr. Marshall said it was a great privilege and honour to serve as Australia's 46th Premier. He was already lining up another job while he was there, people. How does he care? These people don't care. They're on six figures, sometimes seven figures. They don't care. They don't lose people. Okay, you think, ha-ha, he lost the election, he lost. He hasn't lost anything. The guy's still rolling in moolah, and we are not. So who's laughing, people? Who's laughing? This is what these people do. That's why I'm tracking them down. There's a great picture, too, in that story, too, with him smirking behind a smirking ScoMo, the ex-Prime Minister. It's just that we were utterly, utterly had, people, completely. So there you go. It doesn't say any more. It's just that photo. And then moving into one of the final stories, it's got Stephen Marshall, confident successor, can reverse Liberal fortunes as party elects new leader. So it's got a grinning Marshall. He looks like a car salesman, a manic car salesman. That's the look I'm looking at. Okay. And 19th of April, 2022, abc.net.au. And it just says former South Australian Premier Stephen Marshall has defended his political legacy ahead of relinquishing the role of state Liberal leader at a party room meeting on Tuesday. And it just goes through all the great things he did and all the bad things he did, in a sense. And it's really just a pat on the back, the whole article, nothing more. And he goes on about the pandemic a little bit, but not really. But he was the be-all and end-all in South Australia during the worst time in Australia's history. And then it says here, final story, the final story is one I read earlier about how he was promoted to that job in the US. But in the 4th of May 2022, when he was gone, it says South Australian government moves to shift COVID powers from Grant Stevens to Public Health Act. Now, that's when the police were ruling with an emergency act, and now it's moved to the Public Health Act. So this is where they're starting to whittle it back. And it's got the state government will introduce legislation to Parliament to amend the Public Health Act to include a baseline level of COVID-19 rules. And it says Peter Malanuskas said passing the amendments to the Public Health Act would enable the state to lift its emergency management declaration by June the 30th. So that's when they lifted it. And then everyone went, so what did we just go through? It's like, well, it was an exercise from the WHO and the global elites to see if you would QR code against your will. And you did it. So we're happy. Moving on. That's it. And actually reading the rest of it, what they did with this Public Health Act is they left the COVID rules in place so they could continue using him if something happened in the future. That's what that was all about. So they lifted the Emergency Act and made it part of the Public Health Act, which means they wrote in the mandatory mask if they need to do it and the vaccinations and all the rules they did with quarantining, they've left those rules in there in South Australia. So beware. It says lockdowns, broad mask mandates and hospitality restrictions would no longer be able to be imposed once the emergency declaration ends unless another one is declared. So there you go, people. Getting ready for pandemic 2.0. So to finish up on that story, it says the commissioner will remain the state emergency coordinator and can declare another emergency in the future if he deems it necessary. And he says, the potential for another human epidemic to impact on South Australians is still there. And if that was to occur, even if it is COVID, and we saw a massive impact on our community, we saw devastating consequences in relation to mortality or our hospitals were overwhelmed, it was still within my authority to declare another major emergency. So they just wrote it into law, people. They're not going to wait for an emergency act again. They'll just click their fingers. And there it goes. So there's South Australia done like a dinner. Anyway, people, it's like the end of the podcast for today. This is the Conspiracy Oz podcast for Wednesday, the 17th of January, 2024. Thanks for listening. Over and out.